That was his way of just saying, I'm the boss, this is the rules, what I tell you to do, you do, and if you don't like it, you go and play for somebody else. And it was simple as that.
Hello, I'm Jim Salverson, and this is Football Stories, Season 2. Season 1 is all about some of the stories from off the pitch and fascinating chats with the likes of referee Mark Halsey, Manchester City coach Steve Eyre, and Gary and Colin Lewin, who were physios at Arsenal under Arsene Wenger. Season 2 is about stories from people who have actually played the game at the highest level. Today, it comes from Nottingham Forest legend Mark Crossley, who's a man who has some brilliant stories to tell, largely stemming from his time playing under one of the greatest men ever to walk the touchline in English football, Brian Clough. Today's podcast is a must-listen for any football fan or any clothy fan, but there's a load more to get your teeth into as well. I made contact with Mark over a shared love of new and emerging bands and music, so there's a little bit of chat around new music as well, if that kind of thing floats your boat. Today's football story is from Big Norms, a.k.a. Mark Crossley. Former Nottingham Forest, Middlesbrough, Fulham goalkeeper, to name just a few. There's loads I've missed off that list. Mark Crossley. How are you doing, Mark?
Afternoon, Jim. Yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. Let's start at Nottingham Forest because it's where you made your name. 300 plus appearances and a bit of a cult hero at the club as well. I assume that's the team that you still feel the closest affinity to. Do you find it disappointing to see them where they are now, this club with this huge fan base, huge potential, but struggling to get back into the Premier League?
Yeah, 393 appearances in total, including League Cup, and it was before the Premier League, actually, so I'm showing my age there. It was I made my debut in 89, and obviously Premier League started in 92, but it was like the old Premier League, we call it that anyway, but it's been a long old grind. 1999 was the last time Forest were in the Premier League, so it's a long time, and each year supporters, myself included, think, you know, maybe this is going to be the year. But there's been that many managers and that much turnaround in ownership that you just can't see where it's going to come from now, unfortunately.
I know a couple of Nottingham Forest fans, and their attitude whenever a new owner or a new manager comes in is, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the turnaround we need. Do you share that?
I do, yeah, because having spent 13 years at the football club, I am still a fan. They are the team that I mainly look out for because they gave me my big break in football, Brian Clough, all them years ago. So you're bound to have, you know, some kind of affinity with the club. And I certainly have. And I still get to games. I sit with the fans. I complain like the fans complain because it's just frustration that such a big club and with such great history finds itself languishing down near the bottom of the Championship at the moment. So it's not very pleasing at the moment.
You mentioned Brian Clough there, who is obviously one of the cult heroes of not just Forest, the game in general. Absolutely legendary manager. You played under him for a few seasons. How did you find him as a man? How did you find him as a boss?
He was one of the greatest fellas I've ever met in my life, entire life. He didn't just teach me or coach me how to play football, but taught me about life skills in general. You could always say, and most players say, he was like a second father to them. He knew when to give you a kick up the backside when you needed it. He knew when to put an arm around your shoulder and give you some loving, which he did very often. He didn't give that appearance, but he was a very loving man indeed. And I had 6 years working with him. And without him, I wouldn't be the human being I am today, because we all have our fathers to guide us along, and parents and such. But to have someone like him to guide you through years from being 18 up to 24, making my name in football with him, I love talking about him. That's why I'm on the after dinner circuit, and I'm very, very busy, because no one gets bored listening to what Brian Clough had to say. So it's true though, isn't it? You know, he was that popular in interviews, and there's that many stories that you can tell. I took it onto the after dinner circuit, and it's just gone absolutely well. We've been in COVID, haven't we? So it hasn't been, but from September, October, November, I haven't got a Thursday or Friday free at the moment. So it just shows what how popular he still is. And hopefully I'd like to call myself a good after dinner speaker as well. So there you go.
We all know about the story when he first came into Forest, how he took the keeper at the time down a peg or two, wearing his green jumper, saying, "I'm the only number one at this club," all that kind of thing. Did he ever take that kind of approach with you, where he felt like he needed to bring you back down to earth?
Oh, very much so. I made my debut. He gave me my debut on October the 26th, 1988 against Liverpool. And I was only 18, and I didn't know that I was going to make my debut. He'd rang my parents up and told them to get down to the game that I was going to play that night against Liverpool. But what they said, whatever you do, don't tell him, because he'll absolutely crap himself. And he's right. And he told me at 7 o'clock that I was playing 45 minutes before kickoff. So that was a brilliance behind his man management skills for one. But I played the next two games after that as well, before it was then time to, he realised that he'd got someone that could handle the situation, a young goalkeeper. He didn't have to worry about it, signing another goalkeeper, because I would be the one that would then step into Steve Sutton's shoes when he was about to move on. Mm. But I played against Coventry, and he obviously seen in me that I was getting a little bit too big for my boots. And basically, to cut a long story short, his son, Simon, had a Sunday league team in Division 5, the Derbyshire Sunday League. And they hadn't got a goalkeeper. So playing against Coventry in my third game on the Saturday in the FA Cup, after the game, Cluffy said to me, "Where do you think you're going?" And I said, "I'm going home." And he said, "Well, I'd like to see you at my house tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Bring your boots, and it would help if you bring your gloves as well." So I thought, well, for a start off, I didn't have a clue where he lived, so I don't know how I'm going to get to his house. But I made a few inquiries. I managed to get a lift to his house on the Sunday morning. I had no idea why I was going, but when I got there, he informed me that his son Simon was the manager of a team called AC Hunters in the Derbyshire Sunday League, and they hadn't got a goalkeeper, and I was the one to fill in for the goalkeeper, having played against Liverpool, Newcastle and Coventry, FA Cup and the old First Division. He made me play for his son's team. The team got fined £50 for playing a ringer, and lost the points on the day. And because they lost the points on the day for playing a ringer, he took the £50 out of my wages at Nottingham Forest to pay the fine.
Wow.
That was my kind of introduction to say, don't get too big for your boots, young man, because this is what happens.
Was there any hesitation in when he said,
"No,
get your boots and gloves on your playing"? Was it just, he's the gaffer?
I thought it was a bit of a wind-up to begin with, but like when I went to his house, his wife answered the door, and I was talking to her in the kitchen, and Brian came down 5 minutes later, and it was a bit surreal. Like, he didn't ask the question, he told you. So, and Cluffy did a lot of that. He never asked the question. You was told what to do, and you either abided by the rules or you was off. You was somewhere else. But you got used to that. So I got told that I was playing in this game. So it was like, at first, I must admit, I thought it was a wind-up. But then when I actually got in the car with Simon, we drove to the ground where we were going to play. It was an absolute shambles. And we were getting changed in the same dressing room as the opposition we were going to play against. And a couple of players from the opposition recognised me. They thought it was all a wind-up. And it just went on from there, really. And I hardly touched the ball in the game. They could have actually played without a goalkeeper. It was that one side of the game. But that was his way of just saying, "I'm the boss. This is the rules. What I tell you to do, you do. And if you don't like it, you go and play for somebody else." And it was simple as that.
Amazing.
So, I ended up playing for the Sunday League team. And I do Cluffy's voice and stuff, you see. So I take him off. He had four nicknames for me, Cluffy. He used to call me Barnsley, which is where I originate from. He used to call me imbecile. He used to call me shit house, which was his favourite one. And when I got in his team as a young lad, he started to call me Jigsaw. So leading up to this game for the Sunday League team, he'd started to call me Jigsaw. So I've always been the type of a person that, hang on a minute, why is he calling me that? I need to go and find out. And I'm always determined to go and find these things out. So to get to see Cluffy, you had to go through his secretary at the time, Carol. And always a good time to go and see him was on a Monday morning, early doors, before training, after you'd won on a Saturday. So that time came, I went to see Carol. She rang his office. He invited me down to his office and I walked in. And as I walked in the door, he had his rugby shirt, green sweater, you know, his normal attire. And I'm stood there. I'm a little bit scared. And he looked at me and he said, "What can I do for you now?" So I said to him, "Well, that's why I'm here, boss. Like, all these nicknames you keep calling me, I don't mind all the others. It's part and parcel of football. I understand that. Can you explain to me why you've started to call me Jigsaw?" He looked at me again and he said, "Every time the ball comes in the box, you go to bloody pieces, son." So that was it. End the conversation. At least now I know why he calls me Jigsaw. He probably wants me to be a bit more demanding in the box. So, and that was his way. And that stuck in my mind.
What a footballing education that was. And obviously, I mean, the fact you were playing Sunday League football and a few years later, you're pulling on the number one jersey for Wales, I guess, shows kind of how that education helped you through that. We've obviously got the European Championships around the corner, international break at the moment. How do you think Wales are going to do? And what would be a good result for Wales in the Euros? Would it be getting out of the groups? Would it be going out a little bit further? I mean, Italy, Switzerland, Turkey in the group. So it's not a group of death, but it's certainly a challenge.
Yeah. I've done a lot of commentary on the games leading up to this. And it's a shame that Ryan's not there on the sideline. Obviously, there's other things going on. But they're in good hands with Robert Page, who's been alongside Ryan all the way through. Now, this team is organised, fit, good mixture of the youth and experience, which you can't beat, led by Gareth Bale, Ramsey, if he's available. So if Wales can get the best 11 on the pitch, they can compete with anyone. And I really mean that. And that's without being biased. They can come. Take away a few of those, and what I've noticed is it can be a little bit of a struggle, but they're a good team. They're organised. They play the same system all the time. And if they don't get past the group stage, for me, it'd be a disaster.
Right.
So the aim has to be, for me, minimum quarterfinals.
Is there good performance in recent tournaments where they have succeeded and they have done well? Is that almost a bit of a burden upon them? Because now you half expect them to go a little bit further.
Yeah, they've become a team and a group of players, and you can go all the way back to Gary Speed, God bless him. He took Wales to a different level. He started this. Chris Coleman then took over from him, carried it on and on and on, get to a semi-final of a major tournament. Ryan came in, struggled a little bit to begin with, but the signs were there under Gary and Chris. The signs were there that this was only a matter of time before it came back, and it has done. It's come back, and it's credit to Ryan that he stuck out. I remember him coming under pressure at one stage where he weren't winning games, but now I don't know the record is, but I know it's very good. And they've played against some top teams and really good side. And they now become, it's interesting because they'll be playing teams like Turkey and people like that. And they would always be underdogs going back years when I played.
Yeah, yeah.
Now they're favourites. They're favourites to win them type of games. And it's because of the players that they've got. Simple as that, really.
There's a big debate amongst England fans at the moment about who should be the number one. Jordan Pickford currently has the jersey, but he is seen by many to be prone to mistakes every now and again. Nick Pope, he's been knocking on the door for a few years now, shows great form for his club side. And then you've got Dean Henderson, who's coming from and showing this huge potential. If you were goalkeeper coach, reviewer, England manager, who would you be picking to play in goal out of those options? Or is there someone else that maybe Southgate isn't even considering at the moment that he should be?
No, I think you've kind of like named the main ones there, up and coming. Lack of experience behind Pickford there, with international level, certainly not at Premier League level. Pickford plays better for England than he does for his club. I think we've all seen that.
Yeah.
For his club, he's under the spotlight week in, week out. It's not gone great for him over the last season or two at club level, but I've never seen him perform poorly for England. Some players are like that. For me, you stay with Pickford because he's now got international experience. He looks comfortable. I don't remember him too often playing poorly for England. In fact, I've always commented that he's done really, really well. The other two put him massive pressure on. But if you're going off club form, you wouldn't pick him.
No.
You'd probably pick Pope. Henderson's not playing enough this season. You can't pick him. Although he did fantastically well for Sheffield United. And look where they are now. It just shows how big a part he was that he played in the Sheffield United team.
Do you think there's different demands on a goalkeeper now compared to when you were playing? Do you think there's... Because we often hear how important it is for certain managers to have keepers. Like Pep Guardiola, he wants a keeper who can play with his feet. And
yeah.
Pickford, to a certain extent, that's why he remains in the England team, because he's good with his feet. Do you think... Is it kind of a different set of skills that's required to be number one compared to when you were coming through?
Absolutely. You know, it got changed, I think... the back pass law, I think, changed in 1991, I think it was, or 92, the first in Premier. I can't remember, right, but it was that around then, and the likes of Jim Leighton at Manchester United, they struggled because they weren't good with their feet. Now the game's changed, and the people that the goalkeeper has to be able to play. I have to be honest, I was okay, I was comfortable. I played at centre-back till I was 15. So I was used to the ball at my feet. So it's something I never really struggled with the back pass. In fact, it was one of my main attributes was my distribution. And I love to see it. And I think Pickford's got excellent distribution. I'm not sure about Pope's distribution. I still think it's needs working on. Henderson, yeah, good distribution. But I think Pickford out of the three is better. And it just goes to show with Manchester City, they're a fine example that your goalkeeper has to be good with his feet. Mm. So as before, you probably... 75% of the game, you'd use your hands because you'd pick the ball up, you'd kick it long when I played. Now I would say 75% is with the ball at the feet because the ball comes through to the goalkeeper. He doesn't pick it up. He passes it out first time.
Mm.
So very, very important these days that you have to be on the same wavelength as well as the defenders that you're playing with, that, you know, which foot is his best, where is he weaker, where when the ball's played back to him, where do I need to go as a defender to support him? And all that will be worked on in training with the goalkeepers. So goalkeepers are involved in more in training sessions now rather than just put to one side like when I was playing. Do your own thing and we'll shout you over to training when we need you. Just a standing goal and stop the ball from going in the goal, basically. They were the rules when I played. That's your job. Stop the ball from coming in the going in the goal. Simple as that. But now there's so much more to it. But I think it's for the better. I think it's for the better that goalkeepers can't pick the ball up. It certainly quickened the game up anyway.
Mark, absolutely pleasure to speak to you and to hear your stories about your time playing for Forest and other clubs as well. Thank you very much for joining us on Football Social Daily. Before you go, I know you're a massive fan on new music. Anyone that follows you on Twitter will know you're a massive fan of new music. So I'm going to ask you for one suggestion, one band that we should be keeping an eye on or an ear on at the moment.
Well, I'm a massive Sheds fan and they're playing in Halifax shortly. It's been moved a few times and they're getting backed up by a band called the Skylights from Leeds. And I think they're fantastic. But there's loads of great young bands out there, new bands. I love them all and I don't really want to say one. But at the moment, I'm kind of liking them. A band called Shaded as well and Apollo Junction, loads of them. But I think Skylights have got some really good stuff at the moment.
Picking some fine Northwest-based bands there as well, which
I'm biased.
If you want more recommendations, you can follow Mark on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle? Big Norms, isn't it?
At Big Norms, yeah. Okay.
Go and find Mark on Twitter for more goalkeeper tips and also loads of great tips on new music. Mark, pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Football Stories from the Sports Social Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed Season 2 and you've listened to all the episodes in Season 2, why not go back to Season 1 and listen to some of the untold stories from off the pitch? And if you happen to be a sport content creator, if you've got your own podcast, why not come and join the Sports Social Podcast Network? Find more information or find your next favourite sport podcast by searching Sports Social Podcast Network.
Find more great shows or join the team at sport-social.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.